Welcome to Highway Diary. I'm your host, Eric Hollerbach. With me on Skype is Eric Layer.
Are we live?
We're live. It's Eric Layer.
Hello.
What's up, buddy? You're on my podcast, Highway Diary.
All right. You know, it's kind of ironic. I literally, this second, just downloaded the second episode of my podcast.
And what is that?
That's actually why I thought you originally contacted me, because I'm like, oh yeah, two dudes that have podcasts named Eric.
I saw you. Yeah, I wasn't sure if you were a guest on other people's podcasts or if that was yours starting up. So tell me about your podcast, Eric Layer.
Okay. It's called BFFs. And it's basically about my best friendship of a guy that I grew up with. And we just fucking chat about whatever the hell comes out. We had some higher concepts initially, and then I went there pretty much right before this whole pandemic really went full blast. I went to California for two reasons. One, for like my friend's 40th birthday party blowout, which we had on the beach, which was also kind of ironic now that, you know, this quarantine's or so in action. We were like about 16 of us all gathered together in hot tubs and taking drugs.
That's a petri dish.
Right. We were so innocent back then. And then after that, I went to go record a podcast with my friend in Oakland, where I grew up with in San Francisco. And as we were doing this podcast, all of a sudden the stay-at-home order started being issued. And we were like, well, I guess all of our ideas of like going out into the world and interviewing people and whatnot are going to have to take a back seat. And we'll just become kind of a conversation thing. But it still ended up being fun. I mean, you know, when you're old friends with somebody, you have a lot of stories, a lot of things come up. We kind of like, we have various people come in here and there. His fiance, another friend of mine come in. But mainly it's just the two of us, and we're just exploring our new reality as well as our old reality of our lives together. Basically, that's it.
So you're in New Orleans or you're in Oakland?
I'm in New Orleans, but I was there when all of this happened.
So you got the last flight out?
I stayed, actually, after we recorded a bunch of this stuff, I went to my parents to make sure that they were doing okay in Redwood City. And as it happens, they did need a little help. Like, my dad was like, well, I can still go to the Whole Foods salad bar, right? Because that's how he, like, depends on his lunches nowadays, just right. Goes to the salad bar. And I'm like, I don't think you can do that, Dad. I think you're an 80-year-old man who is, you know, highly susceptible to this kind of virus, and you probably don't want to be handling tongs that other people have been handling. And I sort of, you know, here's how you can order things online and get them delivered to your house and, you know, basic stuff like that. So I set them up with that, and then once I felt like they were also, oh, at the same time, my partner here that I live with, she was sick with lots of corona-like symptoms.
Oh, no.
So I wasn't really eager to return to a house. Like, as much as I wanted to help her, I didn't really want to get it myself. So, you know, at that time, the testing was really sparse, so she went to go get tested, and they're like, well, your fever's not high enough. It has to be over, like, 100.9 or something like that. And she was, like, in the 100.5 range, so they wouldn't even fucking test her. And she's better now, you know? We're still, jury's kind of out as to whether it was definitely it or not. She never had respiratory trouble breathing kind of thing. She just had the cough and the flu. But, you know, it does seem to be manifesting in completely different ways for different people. So it seems pretty nebulous, like, what the fuck it is still. But anyhow, I came back once it seemed like I had the clear, and it's been over 2 weeks. I'm fine. So you
think it's just going to be, like, two more weeks or a week and a half, and then things will be back to normal? Or what do you think? It looks like New Orleans is totally shut down in a way where I know their economy's got to be hurting bad because it's all tourism, you know?
Yeah, New Orleans is, it's fucking creepy. I mean, I'm still actually doing some deliveries, so I'm making a little bit of money. I'm just getting, like, masked and gloved up and making sure I don't get, you know, too close to people for too long, and mostly, like, leaving stuff on doorsteps. But I drive around. You drive around the French Quarter. It's just, it's a ghost town. Bourbon Street is empty. It's so bizarre. Because, I mean, of anywhere, I think, in the U.S., that's one street where you never, ever, ever see it empty 24/7, you know?
Yeah.
That place goes on, as you know, from living here.
Yeah, man. It's, people are like, oh, I want to go for Mardi Gras in New Orleans. I'm like, please don't do that. Like, you know that Bourbon Street's open 24 hours a day. And if you go there late at night and you throw some beads around, you might see some boobies, you know? So you don't have to go when all the roads are closed, you know? That's my
point. They're saying they want to go come now?
No, just people, I live in Jersey now, so if people are like, oh, yeah. New Orleans, how is that? I want to go for Mardi Gras, you know, like old Jewish ladies, you know, that I run into in the grocery store. those are my people. I talk to them because we have the same accent. So
and
I,
the same attitude?
Yeah, yeah. So I just tell them, oh, no, don't go during Mardi Gras because, like, all the roads are closed. You know, it's too much partying, I think. What do you think about Mardi Gras? You love it or you hate it?
I don't, as a tourist, I wouldn't want to come during Mardi Gras unless I knew people very well. And like, I have friends, I've had a couple friends come and stay with me, and I give them, like, our Mardi Gras experience, which is basically avoiding almost all the big parades, obviously avoiding Bourbon Street, the French Quarter, except for a couple certain key times, you know, with locals who kind of know how to navigate it and do the kind of more localized partying. Like, I like it because, you know, there's just a festive atmosphere, but I know how to get away from it too when I need to get away. And there are some great parties and great events, but the tourists aren't going to necessarily know about those. So, yeah, I wouldn't recommend it for just an average tourist experience.
Yeah.
But, and interestingly enough, this year, right, I mean, this is why the virus, you know, the theory of why the virus got so bad here is because of Mardi Gras, because everybody was partying without any clue that that was even a potential.
It's like Sodom and Gomorrah, you know? It's like an old biblical virus because all you sinners out in New Orleans.
That's right. Paying for our good times now.
You think you could just bump and grind all over each other without spreading diseases? You're wrong. You got to change your ways.
So that's why you got out, right? Because you were just like, just too much sin?
Can we talk about this? So we went, I think we started at the University of New Orleans writing program, mm-hmm. right? At the same time, right? 2014.
And that's right.
And then we both got out 2017. We graduated in May 2017, right?
When did I graduate? I mean, it's kind of nebulous because I was working on my thesis for a little bit longer because I was doing a novel. But anyway, roughly.
Okay. So you took two semesters to finish your novel for your graduation?
Yeah, I wasn't taking classes anymore. I was just working on the thesis. I extended it for at least another semester, I believe.
Yeah. No, it's good. But now that you've been out as long as you've been in, right? So you're out 3 years, you were in 3 years. What was it like going back to the real world, the work world, after being in school like that?
Well, in an interesting way, I was still working. I was working in restaurants mainly while I was in school, so that didn't change so much. And then I also went straight from finishing my thesis, my novel, to working on a screenplay, which ended up getting made. It was kind of a local film collective, basically, I was working with. And we had a slight little boost from getting a grant to go to Tribeca and pitch it to people when it was kind of still in its pitch idea stage. And then ended up writing the script and shooting it. And half of it, well, not even half, but about a quarter of it we shot in Myanmar. and then the rest of it out here. So I was really engaged in a project for a good long while. So I don't think I felt that transition, and really up until I think that film project was over. Well, it's still in the editing phase, but the bulk of my work, I was also a producer on it, was over. And then it was kind of more like, oh, right, in reality now, what am I doing for work? And what other, and what about this novel that I finished but really didn't finish? And what about the rest of my life? So I think that was, I had a sort of delayed reaction, I guess. And maybe it's still delayed. I don't know. I'm always trying to work on something, podcast. Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, you know, and I was really into stand-up, and, like, now that with the quarantine, like, that's the thing that kept me creative all the time, because, like, I do stand-up all the time. And I finished some screenplays. I didn't have them produced, though. You're like, what's the name of your movie? And when can people see it, you think?
Well, that's the next question. I mean, in a way, I'm glad it didn't, like, get released right now, because it would have been the worst time to release a film. And it's a very, like, low-budget kind of arty film, but it does have a lot of humor in it. It's called Street Punks of Yangon, possibly hashtag Street Punks of Yangon. We're always debating about what we want to call it. That whole name could get thrown out, too. But essentially, it's sort of like telling two stories. It's a filmmaker's attempt to make this film about punk rockers in Myanmar, and at the same time her the real film that she makes, which is about her community in New Orleans and her journey to sort of figure that out. So that's the basic premise of the film. We're in post-production editing hell, in a sense, into which we keep making new cuts and arguing about which cuts are better and which things should be cut out and which things should stay. And, you know, it's a difficult process. It's really where the film gets made, essentially.
I mean, 100%.
You spend a very intense, short amount of time filming, like 2 months. I mean, ours was even longer than some. And then, you know, up to 2 years editing the thing. So
I'm kind of in a similar boat. You know, in September of 2018, I shot a stand-up special, and I went on tour from L.A. to New Orleans to New York City, and we shot, like, 50 shows. And then, and then I put it, we shot a rough cut, but I had some spelling errors in it and stuff like this that I wanted to fix, but we put a rough draft in, like, 4 festivals, and we got rejected from every festival, including Tribeca. I kept shooting more shows, and I'm trying to, so we're going to re-edit in April and try to put it out in May. But again, like, I was kind of thinking that maybe going for it right towards the Amazon Prime or some kind of streaming service is a right move, because people are quarantined and maybe now's a good time for them to watch something, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I'm honestly, like, well, even before all of this, the hope was mostly just to get it on a streaming service. Like, I think it will play in some festivals. That's the main hope. Like, I see it as, like, a wide release film. I think it's a little too specific and quirky and low budget for that. But, you know, like, definitely maybe a short run in some major cities. But then streaming is where it's at as far as the getting people to watch it. And
yeah, that's my thing.
That's still a challenge, though. It's not like you can just, it's not like a podcast where you just put it up on Amazon Prime. Like, they still have to, like, accept it and think it will make some money for them. So there's still some, and I think a lot of those streaming services were at least until now, because festivals aren't happening, but we're going to festivals and finding films that way.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what it's going to look like for the next several months. I actually just developed, I also developed a series pilot and concept, and I just, actually, it was last week, I got an email from IFP in New York that kind of supports independent projects, and they were doing an episodic lab, and I was like, oh, that sounds like what I would be looking for right now. And I'm like, oh, the deadline's in 3 days. Fuck. So I basically just busted ass, stayed up, you know, 20 hours for the next 3 days working on this thing and sent it off at 5 a.m. or something when it was due. And who knows? We'll see. It was kind of like a fever dream of a project, which we'll see. I'm hopeful, but you know.
Dude, I got. We're in the same boat here. There's a website called Film Freeway. Are you aware of Film Freeway?
Yes, I'm vaguely aware of it.
So you just upload like a fully rendered but lower res version of your movie, as long as it fits in like 2 gigabytes or whatever, you upload it to there. And then it aggregates to like every festival in the world. So then you just click through Film Freeway and make a little package of your movie, and then it gets judged that way, whether they'll accept it or not. But if I had to do it again, I went for all like blue chip film festivals, and maybe that was a mistake, because like I get rejected from Tribeca, which is interesting, because it's like, is that even going to happen anymore? And then I see that, like, oh, you know, Taylor Swift's documentary, you know, I'm Such a Hot Bitch, got right into Tribeca, you know what I mean? And it's like, man, if it's a blue chip festival, they're probably only taking big blue chip movies, like world class, like studio movies, you know?
Yeah, what I've heard is that, like, 1% of the films that get into these bigger festivals are blind submissions, meaning you don't have, like, an agent representing your film who knows people in the festival. Yeah.
So you got to go for, like, the Susquehanna, you know, off-trail film festival and then get some laurels.
There might be those mid-tier ones that you have a better chance for that aren't like, yeah, the prestige, the big ones. We're actually trying, we have a couple leads on people who would represent the film, and I think that's the way to go if you can get that. If you can get somebody who has some contacts with indie films. I mean, it seems absurd because you're like, I figured I'd need an agent once, you know, the film got in the festival, but no, you need an agent just to get in the fucking festival nowadays. So that's the way it works.
It is weird. It makes me want to join a secret society of, like, you know. Anyway.
Isn't that what stand-up is?
Kind of. I don't know if there's secret meetings going on that I don't know about. I just tell my dick jokes and get out of there. But, yeah.
Yeah, the meetings are in the clubs, man.
One thing for sure about going to grad school for 3 years and working on writing is, like you're saying, it's like you get a deadline for this and that. Oh, okay, I've had homework assignments like that, sure. Like, you know how to turn it on, like, just this crazy manic work ethic when there's something, you know, pending.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely am. I've always been a crammer, high school and on, you know. I definitely work well under pressure. There are times where I think, well, I probably would have done a better job had I not crammed this in last minute. This is more for like when, yeah, you have to turn something in. When it's something I know I'm going to maybe present to the public, then I'll spend more time on it. And, you know, like this film, for example, we're not just like getting it out there just to get it out there. We want it to be the best it can be. And, you know, same goes for the novel, which is why I'll maybe never finish it, but we'll see what happens.
Wait, did you just turn in? What did you turn in for a thesis? How many pages was it then?
Yeah, everybody just presumes that just because I finished the thesis, that means that it was ready to go. I mean, it was a book length. It had a lot of words. I'm looking at it right now. I literally have it sitting next to my computer on my desk because, you know, I want it to haunt me for the rest of my days. It was 235 pages, which is almost there. It's funny, the rough draft was like 100 pages more than that. It was like trying to pare it down because I actually felt bad. I was like, okay, for my advisor, the one person who's going to read the draft, they can read this mess of words, but like I felt bad for having three people have to do it. So I'm like, I'm going to cut this down. You know, it's not, it's, I don't know. Like I went to grad school, I guess, I wanted to write a novel, but I did had no idea whether that was going to be my forte, and I'm still kind of not really sure. Like, I find it much easier to write a script and more satisfactory in that way, because it just kind of bleeds out of me quickly, and I'm like, oh, cool, there it is.
Did you take any screenwriting classes with Henry or Eric?
I took Eric. I took the screenwriting class with Eric, and I took the form and idea class with Henry.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you know, that was helpful, for sure.
I think you took it one semester when I was, like, rebelling because some of the other classmates weren't turning in their homework on time, and, like, it was really... So I had a hissy fit, and I didn't do one of the workshops, and I did, like, an independent study instead, because I was like, but, bro, everyone is late with their homework, and if you have to read a screenplay in 24 hours, and then the class is on Wednesday, like, come on, man. So I, like, had a meltdown, like, my third year, so.
Yeah, I remember that phenomenon as well, being frustrated. So I'm like... I don't know. There's something about coming back to grad school at an elevated age, as I'm not coming straight from undergrad, where I was like, I don't have time for this bullshit anymore. I came here to actually, you know, do a lot of work. And definitely didn't come to party.
Yeah.
Excuse me while I reheat some coffee up. So how's the world of podcasting? I'm kind of new to this game, so I'm curious how you find it and what your, you know,
I tips like it.
Of the trade.
I don't have any tricks of the trade. I don't have no sponsors. I just genuinely talk to people. You like, you know, we haven't spoken in 3 years, but I always knew we were buddies. So it's like, hey, it gives me an opportunity to reconnect with old people. That's cool. Then it also gives me an excuse. There's this guy, he used to be the editor of Forbes magazine, and so I'm a big fan of his work, Benjamin Fulford, so I have him on my podcast, and I set up some clips of very intense geopolitical nature, and then some of my podcasts are just, like, more casual, you know? So, right. It's fun. It's, like, whatever I'm interested in, you know. It's more like short term, like whatever I'm thinking that day I can put out. But like a screenplay is a totally different muscle because it takes me like a year to write a good screenplay, you know? So that's more like a different thing where it's like I'll do that in the background and that'll just take forever. But it's nice to put out podcasts quick, you know?
Yeah. I think I didn't mean to make it sound like I can just like, bust out a screenplay in a week or anything like that. In fact, I have had a pretty long history of writing screenplays that I was never satisfied with and just kind of like putting them aside at some point. This is the first time, and I think part of the reason why I was able to finish it and then get it made is really because it was a collaboration. There's something that is helpful about being able to like toss it around the room at some point, being able to talk it through, being able to like kind of think through ideas in person with a group rather than just on a page.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's like you're writing in a pressure cooker because you're getting feedback all the time. So you're like, all right, let me fix that. Instead of like taking all this time, it's like, no, you just make the decision because that's what the group said. And, oh, that was a great idea. So let's do this, you know?
Right.
But also then you have like producer partners. Everyone's trying to push this project up a hill with you, you know?
Exactly.
That is the secret I'm trying to figure out. After, let's say you have a .mp4 movie that's in HD, it looks beautiful, it's been edited, it's been wrote, it's been re-edited, it's done, it's a project file now. Like, do I put it on YouTube? Because then it's like, man, I spent this much fucking money on something, and then I want to get a return on my investment, like, be real, and like, put it in a proper light. But it is tricky, you know, that the end of project phase to like.
I feel like it's different depending on what the project is. So is this? Are you speaking of the stand-up tour?
I'm speaking of both of our projects. Like you know, I'm working on a stand-up special. It'll be done, you know, in a couple months. It sounds like you're in the same position with your movie. It's like, then, okay, now what? And that is, that's a really tricky question that I'm not sure I got a full answer for in grad school, you know? Because it's like, use your contacts, do the festivals, this and that. Is that it?
Right.
But you're thinking that getting a producer's agent is the best way to go, right? Someone to represent the movie.
That is our plan as of now, yes. And, you know, I think we have, like, two leads right now, and it's basically like they either like the cut we send them or they don't. So we're also, well, we want to make sure we at least are happy with the cut before we send it off, too. And then, yeah, beyond that, I mean, my feeling is obviously the last resort, once we've exhausted every other possible thing, has been to put it up online for free and just say, well, here it is. You know, and this part of that, it is kind of like one of those things where people aren't going to appreciate a film like that, even if it's a decent film. Like, I think the mentality is, oh, this probably sucks because they just put it up for free and, you know, there's no formal kind of acceptance into the upper echelon of the whatever you call them, the companies that decide whether something's legitimate or not. Which, you know, has its problems as well. But at the end of the day, they're also seen as sort of curators to sift through the vast amounts of garbage that's being made in order to cull some precious jewels, as it were. So they serve a purpose, I suppose. However, you know, they have their own opinions and their subjective views, and their who we trust to arbitrate our content is always an interesting question, right?
And it's always like a moving target too, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Like for, you know, Epstein and Harvey Weinstein, I think were controlling a lot of it. You know what I mean?
Right. And I mean, you know, one could argue, despite how they got there and the end and their, you know, criminal side, they also were able to release some good films. So, not to say that that's the only way to do it. There's definitely better ways to do it. And I hope that we find those people. And, you know, it's that's the thing. It's like, you hope your work speaks to somebody, and you hope that the goal is that somebody has some position where they're able to help you share it in a way that's going to find its audience.
Yeah.
So you have to ask yourself this question, like, who is my audience, and, you know, and who are the people that I should be showing this to? And you know, I guess for you, it's like, look at comedians that you admire. Look at the people that have represented them. Try to get your work to those people, right?
Right. Yeah, I got some leads in that regard. I'm playing coy, but my first, and so I'm going your same way. Like, I look at who's represented, like, the great comedy stand-up specials, and then I'm going for them, you know? But, again, I'm with you. I need to get it done with this other round of editing. But it is funny where it's like, you're talking about Harvey Weinstein. It's like, you know, didn't he make, like, The Big Lebowski and stuff like that? So it's like, man, his casting couch had some pretty good results, you know? So it's like,
Pulp Fiction was, like, one of the earliest ones, I think.
Right. You want to get into the movie business, sit on this couch. And then Pulp Fiction, greatest movie ever. It's like, wow.
Well, what I think is, I mean, I don't know the exact history. He's probably always had some elements of scumbag. And, you know, some of the elements of scumbag in the film industry is what can help your career, because you're feared and insistent, I guess, and those two qualities seem to often advance your career in the film industry. And then also, like, the more power he got, I'm sure the more, like, whacked out he got on using and abusing that power.
Yeah, it seems like it was probably like a progressive illness, his sexual addiction, where at first it was like kind of consensual and then like less so and then less so. And so like then he gets more powerful and then more people are coming towards him. You know, I'm sure a lot of actresses, like, you know, when he was in his 30s and not as disgusting, were like, oh, look at this guy. He's a young producer, you know. And then as he gets more and more gross, he has more and more millions of dollars and can do more for their career.
Yeah.
It's so fucked up.
Well, it does seem like, as the headlines have preached, time's up on a lot of that. So we'll see how the future unfolds. But yeah.
And we're just trying to do things like the old school way, where we make our own stuff and we try to, you know, get a lick from the tastemakers and then try to put it out. But yeah, it's crazy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll see.
I want to play this is a little clip of you on Facebook Live DJing. Now,
it's all of that is my experience right there.
So this was shot on your porch. You look like you're having a good time.
I'm having a good time. I will say that when I listen back to it and hear the sound that Facebook is able to generate, the sound quality, I'm a little bit less enthusiastic about it, only because, like, well, you're putting out like some of the greatest music that's ever been recorded, and then it's just like sounds tinny and, you know, kind of like that. Now my original impulse for doing this was actually just to DJ from my porch, which looks out onto Charter Street along the Mississippi River, and there's a lot of people walking by or jogging or biking. There's an entrance to Crescent Park right there too, so you get a lot of park traffic. So originally it was more of a live experience anyhow, and then I'm like, well, I'm doing this, I might as well live stream it for folks. And I will say also that the Instagram sound when I listen back is actually better. So whatever algorithms they have going on for the sound is a thing. But I guess, you know, I've had a few people say, don't worry, who cares about the sound, it's the spirit of the thing. I just put you in a little window, and I enjoy your like, spirit more than the sound quality.
So hey, like, you're having a good time. You're just entertaining people walking by. You know, you're grooving.
Wearing my Sunday church vest, as you pointed out earlier, the hat.
Yeah, it does look like a lady's hat. I don't want to, like, misidentify or misgender you or, you know.
Well, I'm wearing a dress, too. You can't necessarily tell.
Oh, you're wearing a full dress.
It's, like, my Sunday best.
Okay.
And I will say this, like, goddamn it, dresses are comfortable, especially in, like, some New Orleans southern heat.
Yeah, you're getting a nice draft.
It's nice and drafty, nice and free-balling.
Whoa. You're not wearing any underwear under there?
Well, no, I am wearing a boxer brief. But still, you don't have the tight, you know, constriction of the jeans or what have you.
Wow.
After that performance was the first time I think I went on my dog walk in the park afterwards still wearing the dress, because I was like, you know what? Screw it. I don't care right now. I'm going to be cozy. And I really don't care about, and I think maybe this one thing that is good that's coming out of this is people sort of, I don't know, getting that, like, I can do whatever I want at home kind of feeling. I can wear whatever I want, I can be whoever I want, and then maybe taking that out into the world a little bit too.
Oh, so you're discovering your cross-dressing side and just you know.
Well,
just being...
I've always known it's. I like dressing up. It's not always necessarily cross dressing. It's in some ways just like wearing something beyond the norm. But yeah, you know, I'm. I wouldn't like classify myself as a cross dresser because it's not something I feel like, oh, I need to do like to really feel like this is me. This is my identity. I always feel like more of a fluctuation of identity. I guess that's the actor past of me, I grew up as a child actor, too.
So. You're a chameleon.
Yeah, it's a little more chameleonic than specific, yeah. I guess.
And so. Also, well, you got... New Orleans is definitely a very accepting place. You know, yeah, with all the exactly. festivals and all that things go on, it's like, hey, you might, you know, anything goes.
I wouldn't necessarily be walking in certain parts of Jersey wearing that outfit or, you know, other parts of the world. It's definitely a New Orleans /, you know, maybe San Francisco, New York, a few places. But, yeah.
Yeah, I was raised for sure ignorant, but, you know, hey, whatever works for you. I'm happy you're happy. It is crazy. Have you, one thing that's kind of tripping me out about this whole quarantine thing is, like, I just went to the grocery store, and it's, like, empty, and, there's police tape around, even, like, you know, children's monkey bars and stuff like that. It is kind of, there are some signals out there that things are really weird, you know? Like, there's no produce yeah. in the grocery store, and then there's, like, police tape around children's things. It's like, you know, are we going too far here with this kind of, like, you know, we're social distancing, we're doing this and that, every business is closed down. How far is this going to go?
I mean, I'm... The more the questions are, yeah, how long is it going to last, and then what are the kind of reverberations after, and will things like this, will it ever be the same again? Are we forever changed? What's the future look like? And, I, you know, I don't have the answers for that, but I, like you were saying earlier, I don't think it's just going to be another couple weeks. It's definitely looking, I mean, they extended the stay-at-home quarantine here until April 30th, and that's still, like, probably going to be extended again. I don't imagine it, like, again, until, like, June, July, something, yeah. getting kind of back to normal, and then what does that look like? I don't know. I'm, you know, trying to stay optimistic and thinking we can get back to things the way they were, and you know, and not that everything was fucking perfect in the first place anyway.
But also, yeah, like if this was like my first or second semester at the University of New Orleans, I mean, that is crazy to have to go through that, like, during school, like, where everybody gets kicked out. Like the local school here, Rutgers, like, they kicked everybody out of the dorms. Like, you can't even stay there. You know? And it's like, what?
Yeah, that was wild. And, like, some kids are like, I don't have anywhere to go.
Like, I rented this dorm. That's what we're doing now, right? So.
Right. They might not get out. Have a exact home, a room in a home that they can go back to. I don't know. Yeah. I mean, I feel like, you know, everybody I know is doing all right, but I just know that there's people suffering extremely from this. And yeah. I'm trying to do a little bit of my part. I've actually been also, in addition to doing deliveries and making a little money out of it, I'm volunteering some of my delivery time and delivering to seniors in house that can't get out to get their food. And yesterday I did 43 meals, and actually I decided I wasn't going to take a break today because it's pretty exhausting. Mm. And now I just noticed I got an email from them desperately needing volunteers. That's what I keep responding to when they say they desperately need volunteers. I'm like, all right, I'll do it.
Oh,
but
that's
I think
great.
I really need this day off.
Yeah. Well, that's good to hear that you're doing your part to help your community, you know?
I mean, I just hope it doesn't come back to bite me and I fucking get the virus, because I'm also diabetic, and so I'm in the zone of, like, at-risk type people, but I don't know. I've always been healthy, and I rarely get sick, and even my diabetes hasn't really had any repercussions so far, knock on wood. I've managed to keep my blood sugar numbers well through diet and insulin, so yeah. Crazy world, Eric Hollerbach.
Good to talk to you, Eric Layer. I think that's all the stuff I wanted to talk to you about. Just, you know, I saw you making the best of your quarantine, and you put a smile on my face. So I said, hey, let's call Eric Layer. Let's see what he's up to.
Yeah,
He's figured it all out.
Well, glad to have had this opportunity to chat, catch up, and feel a little podcast broship.
Hell yeah, and I'll do your podcast, you know, whenever you want, if you want me on.
Yeah, I think I was almost like, oh, I should have recorded this for mine, but I think that I probably should stick to my having at least my co-host with me when we have any discussions, so.
All right, yeah, text me and schedule it up. And what is the name of your movie, and what is the name of your podcast again?
It's promotion time.
It's promotion time. Let's hit your plugs and get out of here.
All right. BFFs, that's the podcast. That's like best friends forever, although secretly it's really just best fucking friends. Whoa. And that's available on wherever you get your podcasts. And then the movie, well, working title right now is, we can go with hashtag Street Punks of Yangon. Punks is spelled with an X, and Yangon is Yangon, which is also the main city in Myanmar. That's the part of the reason why I don't want that title, is I feel like I have to do that explanation every time I say it. But we'll see what happens. That will be available who knows when. There you go.
Whoa. Well, good luck on the, you know, editing and the post and getting
you as well.
Producing partner. Good stuff.
It's good. I'll watch it. Whatever you got, I'll watch it.
Yeah, I'll put mine out in the summer. I can't tell you what platform, but sometime like July, August, September, sometime there. I'm going to put out 3 30-minute stand-up specials. That's how we broke it out. But all
right.
Cool, bud. Nice talking to you, and text me when I can be on your BFFs podcast.
Just two Fs, but you know, however you want to say it.
All right, buddy. Take care now. Bye-bye.
All right. You too. Bye.
And there goes Eric Layer.